5% of our people had had a car accident, at least one, during a seizure before they got diagnosed.
Fellow Homo sapiens, welcome to, or welcome back to, Epilepsy Sparks Insights. The more I learn about the epilepsies, the more I wonder how much more common they might be than we actually realise. Like, how many people are wandering around at work, school, university, having an unusual feeling, which could later be diagnosed as having been an epileptic seizure? Well, there has actually been a study providing insights into this, led by the cool, passionate epilepsy specialist neurologist, Jacqueline French, who is here to tell us more.
I am an epilepsy specialist. I work in New York at NYU, New York University Hospital. I've been there for the last 12 years or so. And in addition, I split my time between that and doing research, clinical research there. And I also run a nonprofit called the Epilepsy Study Consortium that our role is to try and speed new therapies to people through improving the trials that get the therapies to people. And then my third role is that I'm Chief Medical Innovation Officer of the Epilepsy Foundation, which is the patient-facing organization in the United States. And I'm supervising the research team there, but also sort of patient-facing for other medical matters.
We met actually in, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but Lausanne, am I saying that right?
Lausanne, yeah.
Oh, you're better than I, yes. And a lot about AI and stuff like that about epilepsy. So you're like your finger in all these different pies, right?
Yeah, so actually the reason that I was there at that meeting is because through the Epilepsy Foundation, we, you know, back to that issue of trying to improve the conduct of trials and to get new therapies and new devices to people, we run a research roundtable both for therapeutics and for diagnostics, which is mostly diagnostic devices, where we bring in the regulators and the payers and the people who use those devices, because you know it is a very long road for the people who are innovating in that space. They may have a fabulous idea about what they want to do, but getting it through the regulatory process, getting someone to pay reimbursement for it, and having a device that people actually want to use is a tall order. So we're trying to help with that. And so we are at the Epilepsy Foundation, we are all things devices. We actually have, which is a good thing, we have 20 companies signed up for our research roundtable. So there's lots of activity of different companies, and they're doing all different kinds of things, from wearable devices to platforms that people can manage their data on, to cameras that, you know, sit over the bed, for example, and look at movement in the middle of the night, implantable devices, you name it. So that's why I thought it was important to go to Lausanne, and it was a fantastic meeting.
We were going to talk actually about, and this is of course all related, your Human Epilepsy Project, which I understand has been going for a number of years now. You've got like hundreds of people involved. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
My research and, you know, sort of my personal passion and interest is when somebody develops epilepsy, and of course, because I've been treating people with epilepsy for so long, we are, you know, it's maddening that two people can present looking almost identical to us. And one of them, their very first medication that they're provided works for them. And as long as they take it every day, they'll do very well and be able to do everything that they want to do. Whereas another person who looks almost the same takes medication after medication after medication, and nothing works. So the original intent of the project was to enroll people with newly diagnosed what we call focal epilepsy, which is epilepsy that comes from one or two spots in the brain, and follow them for as long as we could to see what the outcome was, whether they responded to medication, what medication they responded to, and for how long, but do all that, you know, forward-looking, not looking what we call retrospectively, you know, looking backwards, but actually follow those people in real time and get every piece of information that we possibly could on them. So, including what did their imaging, their brain imaging look like? What did their brain waves look like? We actually drew blood on them for their DNA, for other, other things that are in the bloodstream that could tell us something. And, the idea was to look at all of these things, the type of seizures they had, the way they described them, and see whether there was something that could distinguish those that respond to medication from those that don't. And it was 35 centers and multiple countries and continents. So really very, very broad. And it ended up being about 450 people. So we did enroll those people and we followed them for up to 6 years.
That's long.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And we found that we did, learn a lot. And we're still trying to sort out, what the markers might be of who's treatment resistant and who's treatment sensitive. That work is ongoing. And, one of the intents of the study was to gather all this information and then let all of the researchers all over the world take a stab at it, right? So people can email us and say, I want to look at the EEG and see whether I can find a signal in there, or I want to look at the imaging studies and I want to see if there's something there. So we have different teams looking at the blood samples, looking at the EEG, and hopefully somebody is going to find something. But in the meantime, just the process of gathering all this information has allowed us to find out a lot of really interesting things. And one of the ones that I mentioned I wanted to talk about today is we enrolled patients within 4 months of their initial diagnosis,
Okay.
right? So that's the time that they learned that they had epilepsy and they got started on a medication.
And what age do they tend to be?
So we enrolled people from the age of 12 and up, because there had already been a study in children, so we wanted to focus on adolescents and adults. And what we found out is when we talked to these people, so now they know that they have seizures, right? They know what their seizures feel like. So we asked the simple question of, okay, these episodes, these seizure episodes, now that you know what they are, how long have they been happening with you? And for some people, it was, I had two and then I got diagnosed, or I went to the emergency room or whatever. But we found that for about half of the people that we enrolled, these events had been going on for a really long time. And so we started to be fascinated by why is it taking so long for people to realize that they have a seizure disorder? And here's something that really like blew the tops of our heads off. So 5% of our people had a car accident, at least one, during a seizure before they got diagnosed. And you would think that, that car accident would have led to a diagnosis. But even then, the majority of those car accidents did not lead to them getting a diagnosis.
Do you know why that is?
I think I know. I know some of the reasons. And I think that there are two things that I want to sort of focus on. Number one is that the community really doesn't know anything about seizures. And so what I say is that most people, when they think of a seizure, they think of the television seizure. And the television seizure is fall on the ground, froth at the mouth, shake all over. You've seen it on ER, you've seen it on all of those, medical shows. But the other types of seizures that, you have a momentary lapse in thought processes or just a sensation. We actually came up with a name, the five S's, to try and educate people. Short, sudden, sometimes strange, similar spells.
I like it.
Because, that's what it feels like. It can be anything. It can be anything. So we used a structured interview to get every, sort of detail about people's seizures and what they experienced. And when you go through those descriptions, you know, you're kind of like, that can be a seizure and that can be a seizure, you know, including one of my favorites, a young man who for 2 years, every day, was having a feeling like he heard all music at once.
Gosh, I haven't heard that before.
And he did that repeated, like every day for 2 years. And like he would, when it was happening, he realized that he couldn't hear his friends talking, like the talking sort of became sort of unintelligible to him. You know, he couldn't understand it. It would last about 30 seconds. And yes, he was curious about what it was, but seizures never came to his mind until he had a tonic-clonic or convulsive seizure. And even then, when he had that and he went to the emergency room, people didn't put two and two together, even though he had had one of those music experiences right before he had his convulsive seizure. He didn't put it together, and neither did the emergency room. And they said what often gets said by the emergency room, which is everybody gets one seizure for free.
Oh, God, what the?
I know, it sounds amazing, but what that means is that most of the medical community thinks that one seizure you don't treat. You need two seizures to show that it's an ongoing condition.
Mm.
And so since they didn't put those things together, they thought, okay, one seizure, we're going to wait until he has a second one. Well, that didn't take very long. So, you know, in retrospect, you know, he'll sit there and go, I don't understand why I wasn't putting that together. I don't understand it. You know, it's so obvious now, but it wasn't obviously to him at the time. So, and you know, we actually brought him into the epilepsy monitoring unit and we captured one of the music spells. And of course it was a seizure, which we were pretty sure it was going to be. So, and by the way, his father was a neurologist, which makes it even more ironic.
No. Oh my goodness.
So that just goes to show that, you know, like even a neurologist didn't ask his son, okay, did you have any smaller spells? Which is such a common thing. Right? Which is such a common thing. Even people who are treated for the major convulsive episodes for some period of time don't understand that these smaller episodes are also their seizures.
And can be, you know, from different perspectives, equally impactful or more impactful from people's lives, especially if you have more of them and people don't notice, or, you know, it affects your concentration, your cognitive abilities, or in my case, I walked off a railway platform, you know, so many things.
And the car accidents. I mean, the smaller spells are what's causing the car accidents. One woman had three before she got diagnosed. Three car accidents, not three seizures, but three car accidents. So, you know, it's very clear that we need to do a better job of educating the general population about what a seizure could be. Because, you know, like sometimes, if you can imagine, this went on for a decade before people, it was like, the pattern we were seeing is, if you don't have a major motor seizure, you're not going to get diagnosed.
A huge thanks to Jackie. You can find links to Jacqueline and her work at the Epilepsy Study Consortium, the Human Epilepsy Project, and the Epilepsy Foundation via the website. If you've enjoyed this episode and you would like to help us spread awareness and understanding of the epilepsies around the world, please do consider liking this episode and subscribing to the channel, because it really does mean a lot when it comes to raising awareness and understanding of the epilepsies. Thank you in advance.